This is Channel Radio.
Who cares wins? Your health and well-being show here on Channel Radio.
Who cares wins? Every Monday at noon on Channel Radio. On the bright side.
Well, welcome. It's Who Cares Wins. You are here, tuned in, channelradio.co.uk. It is the Who Cares Wins team. The originals were here last week, and it's now back just to the two of us, building castles.
She's singing.
In the sky.
She's singing. Please stop her. Somebody
Hello,
stop her.
Hello, Angela. How are you? I'm fine. But you had a piece of music to play,
I'm sorry,
everybody.
But I've got a piece of music to play because I've just had a bit of a rant. Because I don't think people necessarily enjoy driving anymore. And I love driving. So do madness. But I've been driving in my car. And unfortunately, coming down the motorway, I'm going to have a rant, listener. Apologies, but I'm going to have a rant. What is it with people? It is a 5-lane motorway. Why are people sitting in the third lane when lanes 1 and 2 are empty as far as the eye can see? So I'm cruising down, cruise control on, cruising down at the speed limit, no more. So I'm not speeding, Jan.
Are you sure?
I'm a good girl.
Okay.
I have my mother-in-law in the back, so I had to be in the back, so I had to be careful. Coming down, and I then have to indicate to go all the way out to lane 4 to overtake this car that's doing about 55, and then come back all the way into that lane. I was not happy, Jan.
But is undertaking somebody who is A, being a pillock, and B, driving too slowly.
It's a technical term.
It's a technical term. So on my degree course, that person is a pillock. Is that still illegal?
I think if you take the
letter of the law,
undertaking when it's not like all the lanes are blocked and your lanes are happens to be going faster than that lane, like a traffic jam or queues. But if you are blatantly undertaking and there actually it's clear for you to overtake safely, then I think it's still letter of the law. Maybe listeners out there, you can chat, you can tell us otherwise, but
yes.
I still believe that it is illegal, so you could be done for it.
But we saw something much, much better this morning, didn't we?
It made our day, actually. Well, it was even more bizarre because I'd already had somebody at Herne Bay roundabout come off the Thanet Way heading towards Canterbury or Home Bay,
mm-hmm.
and you come up to the roundabout, and if you want, is it Sar? No, where's the Herne?
Herne village.
So if you want Herne, you turn left, and if you want to go back to Home Bay or down towards Whitstable, then you turn right and go on the old Thanet Way. And I came lovely down there to the roundabout, indicating right, and the person in the left lane decided to turn right. Much to my amusement.
But we're saving the best to last, listeners.
Well, that's amazing, Jan.
You hear about this on the news. It's normally the Anne Finley story, isn't it? We were approaching a roundabout. It's a very large roundabout. It's blatantly a roundabout.
It's huge.
And this chap was reversing on the roundabout because he'd obviously missed his exit. And cars were hooting him. Oh. People were gesticulating.
Can you guess what they were doing?
We were having a laugh with we can't believe what we're looking at. Fortunately, we were nowhere near him, so he didn't affect us, but he very nearly got taken out by this lorry that was coming round the bend, not expecting to see anything coming back other way.
Reversing, because he's missed his turn off. And you're like, duh, it's a roundabout. There is a clue in the name.
Just keep going, and you can come back again.
So that's our rant, listener. We apologise, but we just had to get that off our chest, because we're just flabbergasted, weren't we? Our flabber has never been so ghasted.
See, the sun comes out, and with it come the idiots. Not us, of course.
Oh, dear. I think I need to lay down the dark room. So, yes, you are tuned in to Who Cares Wins. It is the health and well-being show, so our stress levels were challenged this morning. But
yes.
We did our breathing, Jan,
we
and
did.
We laughed, and we said perhaps they were a new driver. Although looking at their age, not to stereotype
Mature
at all, but I think
driver.
That maybe they've had their license longer than a week. You never know, they maybe only have passed last week. But anyway, so moving on, if you want to get hold of us in the studio today, and you want to perhaps tell us of your
your driving stories and how you manage your stress, perhaps, when you're driving or not. People that maybe press your hot buttons and press your stress, let us know. Give us a call in the studio. Remember, the number to ring is 01 303 874 998, or of course you can email us, which is studio@hotmail. No, it's not, I'm making it up now.
You're
as I go
up,
along
studio
Jan.
At
it's studio@whocareswinsradio.co.uk. but probably the best and easier routes to get hold of us, if you can and you're on the internet, is to get onto Twitter and give us a follow @careswins, and then tweet us and we will pick it up and we'll give you a shout out. We'll say hello, or we'll read out your tip, and we will meet over the social media. And of course, Facebook. We are on the wonderful Facebook. We have a page, Who Cares Wins Radio Show, and you can post a comment on there, or you can do a message through Facebook, and we will pick them up by all of our technology means. So I'm just relaxing now, and I'm just sort of chilling out and just de-stressing, Jan. But of course, as always, we need to make sure that our sponsor gets a shout out, Kent Connections. In fact, it is August, the 3rd of August, Jan. Can you believe it?
I don't know where the year's gone.
It is amazing.
Halfway through already.
We are
well
already
into the second
into the school holidays. Yay!
When they're going back. When they're going back.
I'm sure you children are there having a marvellous time. But if you're tuned in to Who Cares Wins, welcome. If you want to give us a shout out, or say hello, or tell us what you're up to with your health and well-being hat on, give us a shout. Let us know. We're down here, obviously, at Channel Radio Studios on the Hagelands Farm. And, of course, Hagelands Farm have the maize. So if you want to come down to that as well, you could explore. Go and see the alpacas. And
that's
then
a
have a spot
railway.
Of lunch with Kate in the bistro. Go on the little railway. I've got to go on that, Jan. I just think it looks so cute. I don't think I've actually been on it, to be honest.
Well, it passes us a few times. As we drive in or out from the studio, the track passes the road, and we've been stopped a couple of times. And it's the one stopping point where you think, I don't mind. Any minute now, I'm going to see the little train.
Here it comes. Anyway, I was distracted there, Jan. Did you see that? Easily. Kent Connections. Remember, Kent Connections magazine, the new one, will be out now, August. So at all various suppliers around Kent. And they are our wonderful sponsor of the show. So big thanks again for supporting our show and supporting getting our name out there and spreading the news of the show. So if you want to have a look, don't forget kentconnections.co.uk. They have a website which replicates most of the stuff that is in the magazine. But of course, I do. I'm a bit of a touchy-feely person. I do like to have the old, good old magazine in my hands and read all the wonderful, interesting articles on health and well-being. So, how's your week been, Jan? Both of us, we've been sharing sort of how we've had quite a challenging and perhaps tiring week.
Yes. Summer's not good for me anyway. I'm not a heat person. I prefer the cool. Mm. And not sleeping well at night. And I came across an article saying sleep deprivation is as bad as smoking for your health, and people who rise too early or get by on too little sleep are just as bad as smokers and can function as poorly as drunks.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently, 4 o'clock in the morning, our ability to process information is similar to the amount of alcohol that would make us legally drunk, and as bad as if we'd had a few whiskies or beers.
Wow.
So if a lot of people say, well, if you can't sleep, why don't you get up and do something, do a bit of work, get yourself tired and go back to bed again.
That's true.
But I think if I try to do work at 4 o'clock in the morning under those circumstances, then I think my clerks would be too happy with the results.
Would it send you back to sleep, or would it actually make you even more sleep deprivation?
Probably make you more sleep deprivation.
But actually, I mean, that's true, because if you think about sleep deprivation in the old days of perhaps interrogation techniques that were used and obviously are now illegal in most countries, unless you're driving around the roundabout the wrong way, then yes, of course, that does actually disorientate people. They don't know whether it's daytime or nighttime, whether they're coming or going. And so again, and that's why you see those signs. If I may go back to driving, Jan, go back to motorway driving, that actually that's why you see those signs about don't drive when you're feeling tired, you know, pull over, not on the hard shoulder, please. Make sure it's a service station. And then, yes, have a break, stretch your legs, get out of the car, walk around, bring your arms up above your head. It does say something. I have seen some signs that say drink coffee. I'm still a little bit about.
I mean, different studies on that, don't they? Sometimes good, sometimes bad.
I mean, my husband can have a double espresso and then go to bed and sleep quite happily and snore his head off all night, so he doesn't have any problems with coffee and going to bed. So yes, if it does help you and you know that coffee does, you know, bring you awake, but if not, just water because it's hydrating you.
Yeah.
Then and stretching and walking about and getting some air, and then perhaps when you get back in your car, open, you know, a window slightly as you move off. But I, you know, there's just a fascination with me at the moment and people's lack of driving skill, because what is it at this latest fad of people pulling over to the hard shoulder to spend a penny? In my day, it's like, no, there's a service station, let's wait till the service station, or should we go before we leave? People seem to have lost this, you know, and they're young people, Jan. They are not people who perhaps have
can't
got,
have this conversation yeah. with me, Angela.
Well, no, Jan, you don't have to stop in a hard shoulder, do you?
I don't have to stop it. I have been known to, I'm afraid. There are certain journeys within the UK where you happen to come off your motorway,
come off your
A road, and never pass a services. Apparently, we're one of the least serviced countries for services.
Not me personally.
And so that can be a problem. I mean, I agree with you. There are people who just take advantage and the wrong thing. But if you actually look at the amount of amenities we have in this country and how many amenities are linked to private companies, and therefore they don't want you to use them unless you're using their service,
which is a bit naughty because Mother Nature and all of that, and also some people with certain conditions and that you can't help it, you need it more often.
and that's
wrong in my book. I'm going to get on the soapbox in a minute. Oh dear.
But I'm coming back to my lack of sleep thing,
because
health-wise, a lack of sleep has been linked with factors such as disrupted metabolism and raised levels of stress hormone.
Yes.
All of which might lead to high blood pressure and increased stroke risk.
Indeed, they do.
But for those who work at nights, there's always been this theory that if you do night shift, that's bad for your health because you're not getting enough vitamin D from sunshine, whatever. Yeah. And actually last year, there's French research showed that the brains of workers who...
Dare we talk about the French, Jan?
We're talking about them when they research. We don't mind their research. Their research showed that the brains of workers who had done night shifts for about 10 years had aged by an extra 6.5 years.
Oh, that's obviously what I did then.
Too much night shift.
Obviously did a lot of night shift.
She's 82, listeners.
Don't remember doing the night shift, but hey, that's obviously my excuse. I'm sticking to it, listener.
But my tips for summer sleeping is foot out of the covers.
Just one?
Well, you can do both, but you tend to fall out if you do both. So just one, because you've got pulse points, thermometer points in your ankles, in your wrists, and in your neck. And if you're a bit of a snuggler, like I do like the weight of the duvet and the pillows
like
around me,
but
then I get too hot and even lightweight doesn't work. So foot out. And I have been known to have a wet flannel or a towel around the ankle, around the wrist, or certain neckties. You can get gel-filled, silicone-filled neckties that swell up in the... You put them in water to soak, and they maintain the temperature, keep it low for quite a long time. So going to sleep with one of those on. So
depending on how you how you sleep, obviously it might.
Having said that, had terrible night last night, despite doing all of those things. So if anybody out there knows of any other tips for cooling down while
sleeping, I heard of one that depending on if the noise of the fan then keeps you awake, but having a fan. Now I can't remember which way around this would be. You have the bucket of ice either I think it's behind it, isn't it? Behind the fan. And it effectively like works like an air conditioning unit.
Oh, right,
yes. Sucks the cool air.
Oh, see,
and then you get cool air blown on you.
I've got a ceiling fan.
Oh, I see.
Because I know I'm always hot. So ceiling fan's going. So I don't know where I'd put the ice for that one.
No.
Wouldn't work.
It'd probably
be dripping
end up raining.
On me.
You'll wake up and think, why is it raining in my bedroom?
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. But yeah, I mean, sometimes having the windows shut all day, keep the heat out.
Yes.
And then open them in the evening once the curtains are closed. Obviously that, you know, if you look at any of the hot climates like Spain, Italy, that's what they do. You never see them with all the windows open
and
during
they have
the day.
Shutters,
and
they have shutters,
don't they,
as well.
It's all dark all day so that it keeps the heat out.
Yeah.
And then obviously your rooms and that are a lot cooler. So we invested in black blinds so that when you close the blind, it also effectively creates like a black back out
right.
in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Because also I know that a lot of people in the summer suffer because of the light. We have more daylight.
Yes.
And they find that they're waking up at 4:30, 5 o'clock. And obviously if they've only just got to sleep, depending on their work shift, then that can be a problem. So blackout blinds or blackout sheets behind the yep. curtains to enable you to have this cave-like feel.
And certainly depending where the sun hits your bedroom or your living room, wherever you are, keeping the curtains closed when you're not in the room to yep. keep the heat out.
That's right. So try and create this. Well, I call it a cave.
A cave.
Create your bear-like cave. Because caves are cold, aren't they, Jan? Even mm-hmm. in the middle of the summer and you go in a cave, yep. it's chilly.
Yeah.
So, yes. But if you've got any other tips, let us know. Remember, on Twitter, on Facebook, or through the telephone. So the telephone, remember, is 01303 874 998. We also have Twitter, which is @CaresWins. And, of course, you can email the studio, which is studio@whocareswinsradio.co.uk. We are talking all sorts. We haven't got a guest, as you've realised, because we're Jan and I just nattering. We're not ignoring
our guests. We promised you a guest.
We did.
We are guestless.
Well, I guess less, yes. Unfortunately, well, it's that time of year as well, the holiday season and things and plans change. So, hey-ho, our best laid plans went out the window, but we're okay with that, and Jan, we're relaxed.
We go with the flow.
We can go with the flow. Talking about Myers-Briggs later and personality preferences. We can go with the flow.
Or we can't, depending who you are. But I've got my pad, I've got my research, I'm ready.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a moment. So bearing in mind the theme of it's a Monday, we've had a bit of a manic start with our travels and our journeys. Let's have a bit of music by the Bangles. I think it's quite appropriate, Jan, with a bit of manic Monday, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Work. Felt door with the back of your hand to see if it was hot. Grabbed baby, straight out to patio. Gran, gold star, and a personal best. Go girl. Dad, Dear, oh dear, oh dear. Left shoes on stairs, blocked hallway with golf clubs. Dad, you're a disgrace to this unit. Again!
Plan an escape route in case of a fire. Practice it, and you'll give everyone a fighting chance of getting out alive. Fire kills.
Wave after wave of good music. This is Channel Radio.
Who cares wins? Your health and well-being show here on Channel Radio.
Who cares wins? Every Monday at noon on Channel Radio.
I'm a rock star.
Hello, hello. Well, a bit of Manic Monday. I thought that was good by the Bangles there, Jan. I thought that after our morning,
yes,
that it was quite appropriate.
But have you got your fire escape route?
I thought that was great, that advert, actually. I quite liked that sort of, you know, let's start all over again. The little military lady there with her little with her checklist going on.
Does it remind you of anybody?
We're talking about Myers-Briggs personality instrument in a moment. So, yes, she was probably one of my particular preferences there. Mm-hmm. So, yes, welcome back. It's Who Cares Wins. It's Health and Wellbeing Day. It's health and well-being time. Remember, we are on in the studio, so live if you want to talk to us here. If you're on the listener back, then don't forget we're not in the studio, but by all means still interact with us on social media via Twitter, which is at Cares Wins, or on Facebook, which is our Who Cares Wins radio show. Okay, Myers-Briggs. Do you know anything about it, Jan?
I've heard about it. I heard about it before I met you. I've obviously heard a lot more about it since meeting you.
Not that I go
but,
on.
But I don't think I've ever done it.
I must.
And every time you mention it.
That's another poem in my head, sorry.
I think of all those personality tests and all those things that you go through at work and they go through phases where everybody, your handwriting's analysed, your thinking processes are analysed. What's your favourite fruit? If you were an animal, what would you be? And I'm afraid
and
my
why?
Heart sinks. But there's something different about this one.
I like this one because, yes, you're so right, Jan. There are so many people out there from my recruitment days, years and years ago, when I was in the HR function and I was in recruitment. We obviously, as part of our recruitment process, would use what we call aptitude tests, which are testing your aptitude for a skill that's required in that job. Mm-hmm. So, again, a lot of organisations initially, when all of these tests came out, sometimes they were misusing them or / abusing them because they were using the wrong test. It's like, why are you testing someone's spatial reasoning when they're not actually going to be doing anything to do with that aptitude, that skill in their job? So it's a related test that, yes, of course, people who do this job have been proved to do well in this test. So therefore, we'd like to know how your aptitude is. Therefore, we'd like to give you a test. Fantastic. And it's not there's a more of a right and wrong with that test because, mm-hmm. There is a particular answer that's required. These ones, personality, my argument is, and by all means, listener, if anyone's out there wants to have a little conversation with me, either on air or off air, I'll stand my ground. But personality, there is no right personality, because even if you have a personality that, I don't know, like me, crazy woman, I can be serious. I could do a librarian job. I know, Jan, you're laughing, but I could.
I can see it. For about 5 minutes, no.
I might have to go home and then have, a mad half hour or a mad 3 hours, but yes. I could do it. So it's not a personality. It doesn't really dictate your ability. It's more about your underlying preference and that, yes, you may well find that is a sales environmented or a high pressured job good for you if your personality would really, without thinking, prefer a
dark
quieter
room with a book,
a very sort of solo. What's the word I want?
Independent.
Solitary. That's the word. You fill in the gaps, Jan.
Okay.
I'll just give them to you. And so, yes, you might need to think about. And that's where I also encourage with school. And when we start talking to our school kids about careers and what sort of jobs they're thinking about wanting to do and their career paths, is often to actually look at, what do they really enjoy doing? Mm-hmm. Not just the actual subjects. And there's a lot of emphasis on, would you like maths or do you like English? Do you like writing? Do you like, it's like, well, but what else? So,
are you an attention
time,
to detail person? Are you a broad brush person?
And do you like people and teams and sports, or do you like the solitary confinement? And so, all of that should be taken into consideration, which I think it is. There's more.
Well,
of those
I'm not sure it is when people go to study, because there's been this big career change recently on the back of criminal investigation programs on the television, CSI, Forensic. The universities had a flood of applications by teenagers and mature students who wanted to become forensic scientists.
Look at me, Jan.
And what they wanted to do is go into the field, you know, with their torch, go around the crime scene, spot that the killer did X, Y, and Z. What they forget and what they didn't appreciate is the 99 times out of 100, you are in a white lab coat in front of a Petri dish doing one test over and over again. And the level of attention to detail is incredible. And your threshold for boredom has to be appropriate for the task. Yeah. You're not going to be in the field all the time.
And it's that understanding of those kids that want to be the James Bonds and want to drive the fast cars and have all the gadgets. Okay.
You don't want him being a bus driver.
You may have to, for example, you may have to think about, well, that might be my ultimate goal, to be in the SES or whatever, something. But you've got to start at the grassroots, which could be that you've got to go in, you've got to do your 6 or whatever weeks of training in whatever particular armed forces, and then you've got to work into a particular job, and then it's a progression from there. You don't join the SAS from school.
No.
Well, I don't know if they're recruiting.
Unless it's the Swedish animal sanctuary.
Unless you drive on the motorway, and then I might decide to set up a school anyway. Right, and actually it's not a school, Jan, it's a prison. I'm going to lock them in there, never to be let out again. Now, moving on, Myers-Briggs is a personality tool. It's not a test, and that's one of the key things I always explain to people, that it is a tool to help people understand themselves and help them understand perhaps how they can work in teams better if it's a work environment. How they can improve or think about their relationships in communication, how they can work with perhaps less stress, how they can realise that perhaps by knowing themselves better, they can actually perhaps even reduce their own stress and go home from work feeling a little bit more refreshed and ready for the family events rather than getting home and, you know what, I'm so exhausted, I fall asleep in the chair and that's the end of it. And sometimes it can be linked because we're living out of what I call our preference. We're not living with our preference. So first of all, Myers-Briggs type indicator. There is a clue in the title. It's not a test.
Type.
It's a type. So it's about preference. It's about, and the best way to describe it is, if you, the listener, are now with me at the moment and you have the opportunity to grab a pen and a piece of plain paper, grab a pen, grab a bit of paper, a scrap bit of paper, a scrap envelope, a notepad, anything you like, and just sign your name on it. Don't worry, I'm not going to collect them up and sell them on eBay. So you can shred it afterwards if you wish. For security purposes, I would suggest you do that. Don't leave your signature lying around randomly. But you just signed your name, okay? Now, that was using your preferred hand. Yes, you hopefully used one of the hands if you have two. So we're talking about you having the choice of two hands to use, and you chose one, and that was an unconscious effort, and you just picked it up and you signed your name. Now I'd like you to put the pen, yes, Jan, you're going to do it as well. I want you to put the pen in your non-preferred hand, which is the other one.
This is much more fun.
And I want you to sign your name on that bit of scrap paper or that envelope or whatever you've got. Just sign your name. And interestingly, there may well be a hesitancy. You may well feel silly. You may well be not even doing it yet because you're still trying to work out how to approach the piece of paper with your pen. And it all looks a bit weird, and it's, do I come from the left? Do I go straight on? Do I come from the top down? In fact, you know what? I'm even struggling holding the pen. How do I physically hold this pen in my other hand? All of those thoughts are going through. Now you're actually attempting to draw or sign on that piece of paper. You're signing your name, and it may not be going so well as the preferred hand. But you're doing it. You're having a go. There may be even some giggles. You might be laughing at yourself or having a giggle with the signature and what it doesn't look like. It doesn't resemble your signature at all. Perhaps there's a reflection, a memory of school, of childhood, of learning again. And actually it does look quite childlike, perhaps. All of that is natural. All of that is normal. But interestingly, you may now be hearing, if you're listening to me intently, that there is a particular list going on of when you use your preferred hand, it was quick, instant, you didn't have to think about it. When you use your non-preferred hand, it's a lot slower. You've had to actually really consciously be aware of doing it. It's a bit sort of mindful writing.
Yes.
Everything else disappears. You know, if like actually, Angela, I wasn't really listening to you because I was so concentrating on trying to sign my name on this piece of paper, which normally takes you two seconds to do. So that is the example of preference. When I asked you to pick up the pen and sign your name, your preference was to use one of your two hands.
See, it could be a trained thing, though, couldn't it?
It could be a trained thing in the sense that perhaps your parents, when you were younger, encouraged you to always, you know, they always gave you the pen and encouraged you to put it in your right hand.
Because being left-handed was considered wrong.
Well, yes. I mean, my father, for example, in sort of 1930s, 1940s at school education, it was actually physically sort of his knuckles were wrapped. If he was caught using his left hand, used to wrap him over the knuckles, tell him off, because it was, no, that's weird, alien, that's wrong, unique, which is weird, isn't it, Jan?
It is,
nowadays.
It's got
but
two
anyway,
hands.
In those days, it was seemed and deemed wrong, so people had to use their right hand. So, actually, yes, he ended up ambidextrous, because at home, no pressure, he used his left. Mm-hmm. At school, education,
he did
what he was told, and he used his right.
So it actually benefited him that way.
It did, actually. So thanks very much. But think of other ways of
doing it. But I remember being on a course where we were all told just to fold our arms.
Yes, that's another.
That's more intuitive, isn't it? You don't really have time to think about that at all.
That's right. Yeah.
Whereas writing, you think, I've got to pick my pen up.
What do I normally do? I'm given a pen.
More time to think about it.
Yeah.
And also the one of when you link fingers, so you're sort of clasping your hands. I can't think of the phrase that describes.
Not that I've not come across that one so much, because that one I normally do when I turn it over and we do left brain, right brain, because it then confuses the issue.
Because it's a bit like when you fold your arms, is your right arm above your left arm?
Yeah.
And when
you clasp your hands, is your
left thumb above your right thumb?
Fold your arms as if you would normally fold them. You're sitting relaxed at home, or you're sitting on the train, maybe you're commuting. You fold your arms. Now, listener, have a look at how your arms are folded. So when you look down, you'll probably see that one arm is on top of the other arm. You may have the little fingers poking out the hole at the top, or they may both be folded under your armpits. But the arm is the key. So one arm is probably going to be... So Jan, which are you? Are you going
I'm
right?
I'm left on top of
so
right.
So you've got your left arm on top of your right. So that's unconscious. You didn't think about it to a degree. I know we've been talking about it now, but you didn't really think about it. So that's your unconscious, your preferred way of folding your arms.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we mean by preference. Because if you unfold your arms and now just wiggle them about, shake them about, and now what I want you to do is consciously fold your arms so that your right arm is on top. So effectively fold them the other way. So, listener, if you had your right arm on top, you'll unfold your arms and now you'll make a conscious effort of folding them so that your left arm stays on top now. Now, this also can cause you to have some giggles and some fun, and you feel weird and it feels awkward and it feels strange. It takes time. The process is really slowed down. Again, it's not that you can't do it. So notice personality, a preference is about you. Not saying you can't. It's not about ability, but it takes a bit more time, a bit more effort, a bit more conscious thought. So the idea, and this is from, I can't claim fame to this, Jan, I apologise. It is actually based from Carl Jung's theory that we were born pre-wired.
Okay.
So he did,
we
he
as an
believed,
individual.
We as an individual, right. You know, a baby is born, they have this pre-wiredness that, for example, if you were to roll a ball to a little baby, they will have this preference of reaching out for it with one of those hands,
okay.
If they are both able and able to move them, or they will kick it with one of those feet. So watch a baby, a newborn baby, when they're able to start moving and seeing things, you know, where do they tend to grab their toy, or what do they try and grab? Which foot do they try and put in their mouth? That's their preference.
So if we look at the David Beckhams, the Ryan Giggs of this world,
maybe.
Chances are, except that I know Ryan Giggs favours one foot.
You see, Jan, you're talking an alien language now, because she's talking
footballers
football.
Who can play with both feet.
Ask me one on the motorcycle sport and I'll be with you. But carry on.
So a footballer who can kick with either foot, probably as a baby, might have favoured one, but would also include the other.
Or has been encouraged.
Whereas the rest of us would probably always favour the dominant foot.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So there's that preference.
So when we
talk about Myers-Briggs...
Is Myers-Briggs a person or two people?
No, it was two people. Because Carl Jung's theory of this sort of pre-wiredness... And Carl Jung was the first person. He was a Swiss psychiatrist who then started to sort of analyse why is it that people are extrovert or introvert? And he started to analyse that in much more depth. When he passed on, Isabel Myers and Catherine Briggs, mother and daughter relationship. They decided they wanted to expand his research further and his work further, and they also wanted to devise a test or a questionnaire to actually help people to understand, well, what are your preferences? What do you have? And so they actually are the ones that are the originators of the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Questionnaire. So it is a booklet, and it contains 108, if you recall, don't test me on that, but it's 108 questions around personality. So you will be answering, so are you most like this or least like this? Or out of these pair of words, which one are you drawn to initially, immediately? And out of that, the questionnaire will then give what we call a test result, or a questionnaire result. So it's not actually saying it knows you, because obviously a piece of paper can't know you personally, Jan. It can only give you.
My piece of paper can.
It can only give you a response based on your answers. So let's break it down to real, for me anyway, easy to explain terminology. If I had 10 questions and I had 10 responses from you, Jan, if you gave me 6 responses with the, for example, the right-handed preference answers, you chose all of those, and then only 4 of them were your left-handed preference answers, for example, the test would say your preference is right-handed.
Okay.
That's the suggestion. That's what the answers are indicating. So that's how the questionnaire has been designed. There is an even number of either these different E's, I's, and J's and P's to actually help you diagnose or assess. Are you more of that preference? Not left-handedness, but their types, or of the other. So the difficulty is where people think it's about ability, and they think, actually, Angela, I'm both. I can do this, and, you know, I can write left-handed, and I can write right-handed, but one of them's probably better than the other.
So what sort of things is it telling me within either life or work?
The indicator covers 4 areas, what we call 4 dichotomies, and the areas are complementary attitudes to the world, so how you effectively are energized and interact with the world. I always explain this in the way of, if you are a battery, you're either going to be what we call a solar powered type battery, which is energized and recharged by the environment, the external events.
Mm-hmm.
So you're an extroversion type preference, but that's not about being a life and soul of the party. Or you're an introversion, which is the battery that needs to be plugged in and left alone and not touched and not disturbed for about 16 hours. So that's how you tend to be recharged. So think about typical holidays and what recharges you. Then there's information you trust. So an area of, if you're, for example, researching information for assignments or radio shows, the information that you would tend to trust. You're either what we call a sensor. You tend to look at information you can touch, taste, see, hear, feel. So it's very much in the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And or historic events. So research that's filed away and you can call upon it. So it's from the past.
Right.
Here, it's been proven. It's been done. Whereas an intuitive preference, which is the opposite, is someone who is much more taking information by seeing the bigger picture, maybe stepping back, focusing on relationships and connections. So it's what we sometimes in business would call blue sky thinking.
Okay.
So we're up there sort of, you know, big picture, big sky thinking of, you know, oh, you could do that, that and that. And they're looking at possibilities and patterns, not so much in the present. They're looking into the future. So a bit like an entrepreneur may say, I think this will work. The sensor would say, well, how? Exactly.
Show me. Yeah.
And they were like, well, I've just got a feel. I've got a cut. Let's go for it. So again, opposites. Then there's decision making. Mm-hmm. So about how you then perhaps with that information you've got, how you make a decision. So whether you tend to make your decision based on the logical consequences. So a bit like a pro and a con, a cause and effect,
right.
Strategizing, making a list and actually working out objectively the best decision to make. The opposite of that is a feeler. And a feeler
touchy
is somebody
feeler?
Who... pardon?
Touchy feeler?
They don't have to touch people, no.
Okay.
I just do that for fun. So it is about somebody who tends to consider what is important to them and to others. So it's much more values-driven. And they will tend to think about themselves in the situation. For example, if I had to, say, have a conversation with you, Jan, in my past life of redundancy in my human resource days... If I was a feeler and I had to have that conversation with you about your job is redundant, Jan, we're going to have to let you go.
Mm-hmm.
As a feeler, I may well be quite drawn to how is Jan going to feel about that? And therefore, I'm not looking forward to that conversation. If somebody is again, preference, gut reaction, without thought, they are a T, into cause and effect. Well, this is the best approach. The business has got to stay floating. These are the decisions we've had to make. I'm sorry, but your job is redundant. Here's the options and what we're going to help you. And da, da, da. They can appear very clinically, sort of, you know, they're just going through the facts and data, and yeah. can be sort of, you know, it's, people have often labelled a T preference, a thinker, as sort of, you don't have any emotions, do you?
Yeah.
They feel that they have, but they have a heart, but their preference is to look at the practicality.
Pragmatic, practical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whereas a feeler, they can make decisions and they can still look at the practicalities of it, but their gut reaction, their instant
it's
thought
more empathetic,
is the,
yeah.
the empathy side mm-hmm. Of feelings and the values side of it. They enjoy the understanding and appreciating how others would feel and how that will affect them. And then the last area is complementary lifestyle, what I call how you orientate yourself to the world. And that's what we call, in Myers-Briggs terminology, judging or perceiving. A J preference, a judging, tend to live in a very planned, orderly way. They like to regulate and control life. And they enjoy making decisions and implementing and moving on. And then the opposite is a perceiving preference, somebody who tends to live in a very flexible, spontaneous way. They do love to seek experience and understand life, not control it. So you can hear the difference that, you know, they are opposites.
It was interesting when we were chatting earlier and you were explaining it, you were saying that if you actually did the indicator on a team, you might actually find why the team is either overperforming or underperforming, because if they have eight people all of the same type,
absolutely,
then there's no contrast going on, which either is not holding them back or potentially holding them back in a big way, and they can't move forward.
With teamwork, and haven't got time to go in great depth here, but with teamwork, you can get everyone in the team to go through the questionnaire. They all have their individual feedback from me. And then we do a team day where we bring it all together and we get a team type board up and we get everyone's profiles, because you normally end up with an EFTP or an EISF. So you end up with four letters to your name. Mm-hmm. So you feel like you've been pigeonholed. But I mean, Jan and you and I, we could be, for example, if I talk Myers-Briggs terms, we could be ESTPs. So the four letters for the four areas. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've come out with as our test result or our questionnaire, remember? Yes. Result. We still could be very different because underneath each of those, for example, if I'm an E, there's slight extra bits to it if we went into the detail of, yes, but your E, Jan, and my E
could
are
be very
still
different,
slightly
yeah.
there's still areas to expand and diversify. But you can generally, if you look at the sort of, I suppose, basic principle, yes, I could have a team of, let's say, eight people, and let's say six of them are E's, which is the extroversion, people who like to be externally charged to renew their batteries. So their ideal holidays are going to be very active and involved. They might go on team type holidays. They might go on sporting holidays to learn to sail, to mountain walk, climb, etc. So they're going to be energized by talking out loud, group decisions, knowing what everyone's thinking and feeling, and let, you know, so there's lots of noise and lots of talking. Does that give you a clue, Jan, about maybe my preference?
Who's she talking about, folks?
And then you have maybe in your team two people who are the opposite to that, which is what they call introversion. So somebody who likes to focus on their inner world of ideas and experiences and needs the quiet time to direct their energy, which can be just as frantic, but it's inwards.
And this is where going from individual offices to shared offices to open plan can benefit some people and completely destroy
it can stress them
somebody
out.
Else.
Yeah. Because suddenly they are normally... And the example I give with a work environment is, and I used to do this with, because I link this with time management.
Okay.
And I do with time management discussions with people about how they manage their day and their productivity. But often people will have an E and an I. So we have somebody who really likes... The outer world of people at external events. They have a lot of energy and they are receiving their sort of recharging ability to talk things out loud. So they tend to talk their thought as they think their thought, and they think their thought as they talk their thought. So it's all external.
Mm-hmm.
An internal person is doing all of that franticness, but it's internally going on. So from an outward world, if I looked across at that person, I'm not going to see or hear anything. They're going to be quiet. So for an E person, they're going to look across at them and think, Well, they haven't got any ideas because they're totally quiet.
Or they're not doing any work.
Or they're not doing anything. So, you know, why are they just sitting there staring at the ceiling? And in a meeting, of course, if it's like a team event or a team meeting, they're probably going to get a word in edgeways. Because the E's are talking over each other, talking 100 times, 6 million to the dozen. And the E, the I, is sitting there pondering, letting it all go in, a bit like a sponge. But they're normally the person that if you allow them the space, especially if somebody's managing a meeting or managing that event, the facilitator needs to be very good to watch and allow that person that, let's say you, Jan, you're sitting mm-hmm. there, I may actually watch and say, okay, I've heard a lot from a lot of you, or whatever phrases we, and Jan, importantly, I can see there's a lot going on there, so I may have picked up from your body language that, yeah, she's thinking, but I need to make sure that you get your chance. And often, it's the eyes who have the big idea.
I like it.
Do you like that, Jan?
I do like it.
I knew you would. So we're friends for life now. So, I mean, there's so much to it. For J's and P's, the ones that are control, like to control life and have plans and Gantt charts and everything has to be the right way. So at the fridge at home even, you know, the milk has to be in a certain place and the sausages have to be somewhere else. A P, if they live with them, then of course there's franticness and there's also this friction, because a P's fridge, for example, they're just going to have a fridge and it's just store stuff that needs to go in a fridge. So they'll open it and there's a space, that's where the milk bottle goes. But to a J, that's like, it's in the wrong place. And they can get quite annoyed and get quite stressed. And of course, if this goes on, this can fester and it can cause mm-hmm. a multitude of relationship and communication problems.
And as you said, the main difference between this and other tests is this yes. is an indicator, not
it
an
is.
Outcome.
It
it's
is.
Not set in stone.
And it's also about it's about you. It's not about labelling to say, oh, well, Jan's a P, so she's never going to be able to make a decision because she's, you know, time management-wise, she's rubbish. No, actually, with time management, both J's and P's, for example, those people that tend to either organise or go with life as spontaneous, both of them can still make decisions and both of them can also meet deadlines. So the example I'll give you is in an organisation aspect, you've got a J and a P. They both set a deadline to produce a report. The J will go away from that meeting with that deadline in their mind. They'll put it in their diary. They will start working towards little milestones. They'll maybe do a little bit of work tonight towards it. They'll start getting information collated and together. And it's a bit like revision at school. They may well have done a timetable to revise and plan it and work to that plan. And woe betide anyone that tries to stop them or change. You know, if someone came along and said, goalpost has changed and we need, and they'll be like,
toys out the pram.
Toys out the pram. A P will go away from that same meeting with that deadline, and let's say it's 31st of August, so it's 4 weeks-ish from now. And they will say, that's 4 weeks from now, that's ages. So it will just be put in their tray somewhere and left. And then they might do a little bit of work initially, and then it will sort of just, oh, I'll put, oh, that's an interesting article, print that off, put it with the other stuff, and it gets piled and piled. And then, perhaps the night before the deadline, everything comes out, and then there's this frantic energy, which often can be very positive because they're sort of sparked into action, and they'll meet the deadline. But they meet it bang on, whereas a J may meet the deadline slightly earlier.
And the other thing that you've mentioned is that because it's an indicator, you could actually be 50-50. You could be...
What do you mean by 50-50?
Well, you said there's sort of, you know, 108 questions, which will say whether you're a...
So if you chose, let's say, if I go to 10 questions, if you, because that's my maths.
Okay.
If you can do...
you can half 10.
Yeah. If you can do, is it 5? Yeah. So if you can do the questionnaire and you fill in 5 answers that are, you've picked the 5 answers that would stereotypically have been an, let's say an E type preference. And then the other 5 answers you chose were the I answers. You know, an I would tend to choose those.
And in some tests that would say you can't have that. You've got to be one or the other.
What that means in Myers-Briggs terminology is that you just don't know yourself or very well. So actually, I don't know actually whether I am an I or an E, because sometimes I, sometimes I.
But could it not mean that you're just more flexible, that given a different situation,
you
are a different...
If we go through it in detail, yeah, but from a questionnaire, no.
Right.
But if you had a discussion with me and feedback, we could go through real life examples. Mm-hmm. We might find that actually you've had what we call in Myers-Briggs terms a midlife crisis, which isn't necessarily at the age of 40, which can sometimes flip people. So if I've always been an E, I can have something major in my life happen, which can flip me and I could be E&I, which then if I did a questionnaire would show that I can, you know, not so much can because it's not ability, but I came out as actually my preferences are really evened out and I've developed both because I practiced both.
Mm-hmm.
But some people with just a questionnaire, it's normally because they either the questions haven't really been specific enough for them to actually make a decision on, well, actually, I don't really know because, you know, half of that, sometimes I do that, sometimes I do that. So I might have to, with one-to-one, we actually push and actually, well, you give me the example of, and if I may, we talked in the cafe earlier mm-hmm. and you were saying that, for example, a shopping list example you gave me, you said, I write a shopping list. And then if someone else comes along and adds to that shopping list, if it's not in the right place.
Yes, if not the right place.
What do you do, Jan?
I will have to start again. Or this is, I do notice, as you've said, different circumstances can change things. So if I am tired, if I'm stressed, this is much more to the fore. I'm not like this every day of the week, folks.
But
don't
interestingly,
panic,
interrupting you,
but my instinct.
The initial stress and day-to-day life stress will normally heighten your preference. But if you get too stressed and we get to sort of, you know, watch that curve and we get where we're underperforming, we're losing the plot, we're making poor decisions or actually no decisions, when we tip that sort of balancing point, often we then, for example, in my life, I'll give you my example, I am, as you've guessed, an E, so I'm charged by external events. When I had a particular event in my life that happened, then I went into complete withdrawal. I would come into work and I wouldn't be the life and soul sort of morning, everyone. How are you? I would just come in, head down, straight to my desk, not say hello to anyone. And I was just inside. I was totally in, you know, in my own energy inside my head and my heart. So I'd gone to that I side of my preference, which is not like me.
Mm-hmm.
So with, again, in organisation terminology and organisations who are looking at using this tool, I just think it has so many options to help you, because if you start to know your team better, but first of all, if you yourself know you better, it can actually start to help you with relationships, communication, working with teams, working with somebody who's not your preference and not the same, and also working with somebody who, do you know what, Angela used to be quite vocal, quite loud and talking to people, and now she's really, really quiet. You're completely opposite.
Something going on there.
Is there something going on?
So this is something that you offer as part of your services?
Yes, it is. I use it a lot in coaching, one-on-one.
Okay, and would it be, if somebody was not in this part of the world and looking for somebody, are they looking for a coach? What sort of professional are they looking for?
You have to be licensed, so you need to make sure that they are. If you look at, for in the UK, it's opp.co.uk, and they are the people that will license practitioners to be able to administer these questionnaires and therefore give you feedback and work through it and explain it. In the States, I think if you type Myers-Briggs type indicator, I think, .org, that's the American, if you like, authorizing. So, yeah, do make sure that the person, they don't necessarily have to be a coach. As long as they are licensed in this tool, then you could have a one-on-one or you could bring them into your organization as well and link it with teams or working with a particular team or just part of a team event it could be.
Well, lots to digest
there.
I know.
Look at that. Time's whizzing.
Time's whizzing.
Wow.
Bit of music.
I'm going now.
No, not yet. Not yet. We've got some more news after the break. But a bit of sad news over the weekend with the passing of Cilla Black. So in tribute to her, we have a piece of music. I'm sure you'll all recognise
this. We're going to have... Shall we see if they reckon they should do, shouldn't they? Sing along. And we'll be back.
You're my world, you're every breath I take. You're my world, you're every move I make. Other eyes see the stars up in the skies, but for me they shine within your eyes. As the trees reach for the sun above, so my arms reach out to you for love. With your hand resting in mine, I feel a power so divine. You're my world.
with your hand resting in mine. I feel a power so divine. You're my moon, you are my night and day. You're my moon, you're every breath I pray. If our love seems dead to me, then it's the end of my world, end of my world, end of my world for me.
When comes the wave of good music, this is Channel Radio.
Who cares what you lose? Your health and well-being show here on Channel Radio. Channel Radio. Channel Radio.
Okay, we need to get so much jam packed in here. So, Jan, I know that also we need to talk about some of the other stuff we had planned for today that seems to have gone out the window a bit, but I know you've got some very interesting stories.
Well, I haven't started. We'll try and play them, talk about them next week or the week after. Mm. Just some snippets. The Trust Me, I'm a Doctor program had a brilliant article and did a bit of research on cravings, chocolate cravings. So if you don't know about that, we'll come up with that soon. But the two things I do want to shout out to at date is either end of the living scale, there's an 8-year-old who's completed his first triathlon.
Wow.
His 8-year-old Bailey completed his first ever triathlon in Yorkshire. He has cerebral palsy, which is a condition that affects movement and coordination, but it didn't stop him from taking part and completing the triathlon.
Yay.
He competed in the children's event for 8 to 10 year olds, swimming 100 metres, riding a bike for 4 kilometres and running for 1.3 kilometres.
Wow.
And they say despite stumbling twice on his way to the finish line, Bailey picked himself up and ran the final 20 minutes of the course without his walking frame.
Oh,
so that's brilliant. So that's the 8-year-old.
Oh, it takes me back to the Great North.
At the other end of the scale, we have 96-year-old Charles, a former dentist, who now holds the 100-metre and 200-metre British sprint records for his age group.
Uh-huh.
And he's now setting his sights on global success. In March, he's been nicknamed the world's fittest OAP, which is brilliant. He set a new age group record when he ran 200 metres indoors in a time of 55.48 seconds. And then last week at the British Masters event at Alexander Stadium in Birmingham, he improved on his personal best and also set a British record in the M95 category, which is the over 95s.
Wicked.
He ran 100 metres in a record-breaking 23.78 seconds.
Yay!
Isn't that incredible? So we've got
just
either end of the scale.
Anything's possible.
And with the summer, you're all out there getting fit, getting healthy.
Yeah.
We picked up a leaflet for a
guide
dog charity.
In fact, we've got a couple of minutes, literally. But next door in Kate's Bistro here on Hagland's Farm, which I do definitely recommend you come down for a bite to eat. Dogs Unite for guide dogs. You're invited to join me on a sponsored dog walk to help guide dogs train more four-legged heroes. It's 23rd of August. It's a Sunday. Starts at 10 a.m. at Godmersham Park. Have I pronounced that right?
I think so.
Godmersham, CT4 7DT, and it's free parking. You choose to do either a 2-mile or a 4-mile walk. Unfortunately, it's not suitable for wheelchairs. But you do need to register in advance to get your free dog cape.
Can you ride your dog?
I don't know, Jan. Depends on the dog. Register on the day and donate £25. It's guidedogs.org.uk/dogs-unite.
So there must be a lot of you out there doing charity events, hosting fundraisers. Let us know. We'll give you a shout out.
Well, don't forget the community show as well.
Absolutely.
Double up between the two.
Now, next week on the show, barring incidents, accidents, and all things summer related, we are going to be discussing well-being for the whole family with Deborah Mulvaney of Shaping Wellness.
Brilliant. We look forward to meeting her and chatting with her next week. Don't forget, coming up, we've got Richard Hubbard. Then we have the Big Band Show, Wonderful Comrade at 7 p.m. with the Grown Folks Groove, and then 9 o'clock Revolutions. Enjoy your week. Let's have a bit more of Scylla.
Have a lovely week all.
Take care, everyone.
Anyone who ever loved could look at me and know that I love you. Anyone who ever dreamed could look at me.